This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports update.
The update from One Bills Drive. The Bills are probably going to have to go with Cody Ford at right tackle this week. They've got the injury to Ty Nsekhe. Yesterday, head coach Sean McDermott had no more information on Nsekhe's ankle injury. Still evaluating, he said, but Cody Ford getting ready to take over there. He's been splitting snaps with Nsekhe all season long. He started 9 of the first 10 games at that spot. And going into the Miami game, Ford had 52% of the snaps. He's probably going to get the most of them now. Bills have a job share situation at cornerback as well, apparently, based on the Dolphins game. Levi Wallace started and got 33 snaps. Kevin Johnson got 36. Defense coordinator Leslie Frazier says they'll take a look at it this week and decide whether to keep that rotation going. Back to practice tomorrow for the Bills. They got the Denver Broncos coming here on Sunday. 1 o'clock kickoff at New Era Field. The NFL released the names of 24 finalists for the title of the all-time running backs. They'll pick 12 of them this Friday night on NFL Network. Buffalo's Thurman Thomas among the finalists for the top running backs, the 12 top running backs in NFL history. It'll come up on Friday night, 8 o'clock. On the NFL Network. The Dolphins have cut running back Mark Walton. They were made aware of a police matter involving him this morning. Cut immediately. He was already serving 2 games and a 4-game suspension because of 3 different arrests during the offseason. The Raiders have signed former Bills linebacker Preston Brown to a 1-year deal to finish up the season. They've been looking for help at the inside linebacker spot. Brown just released by Cincinnati last week. And the Browns are putting strong safety Morgan Burnett on injury reserve. He's got an Achilles injury. Started 8 games for Cleveland this year. 2 sacks, 41 tackles, and an interception Thursday against Pittsburgh. It's a tough blow to a Cleveland defense that is without safety Eric Murray and will be without defensive end Miles Garrett for the rest of the year. Sabres home against the Minnesota Wild tonight. 7 o'clock faceoff at KeyBank Center. Buffalo goes into tonight's game with a 10-7-3 record through their first 20 games. 7 o'clock tonight. At KeyBank Center, Sabres. Welcome back to the show. I'm John Murphy, right next to Steve Tasker. We're coming to you from the Seneca Studio in Orchard Park. We've had a good, lively show. We've had Kyle Brandt already on the show from NFL Network. That was a pretty good segment, really good segment. And we had, we have Luke Tasker coming up. Steve's son, Luke, wide receiver, Hamilton Ticats, getting set to go out west to play in the Grey Cup on Sunday. His 3rd Grey Cup. That's pretty cool. That's something to talk about. You know, when his career is over, whenever it's over, right? I mean, you should be proud of that too. By the way,
it's been a blast to have him play up there, particularly in Hamilton. Now, he'll tell you that it's been cool to have him just an hour north of Buffalo. Him and his wife and family live right in here in Buffalo area, and then he goes up and they get a little apartment up there right outside of Hamilton, so he doesn't have to make the trip back between practices and games and stuff. But it's been fun. Hamilton's just north of the border. We were there Sunday. Brand new stadium, 5 years old, 25,000 seats. So it's, you know, it's a little bit like the place in LA Chargers playing, mm-hmm. except it doesn't have the end zone. It's just on sides. It's been great. It's been a great experience for our family, great experiences and memories for our family while he's been up there. It's been fun.
We'll talk with Luke about all of that when he joins us on the show. We got a pretty good Twitter poll coming up here today, and let's revisit that, let you know what's going on with that Twitter poll today. It deals with the Buffalo Bills, and yes, it's only the Dolphins. I'm not going to say that anymore the rest of the week. We know who they beat. We know how bad the Dolphins are. We know what their record is. But they beat them. They beat them soundly, and they kind of appear to fix a lot of what's been going wrong with their offense. So what do you think? What's the biggest factor for the Bills' offense from Miami that they need to keep to sustain success? Call in. We got lines wide open, 803-0550. Outside Buffalo, it's a toll-free call, 1-888-550-2550. Send in a tweet. We'll read it on the tweet sheet. Or vote in the Twitter poll. We got 580 votes on the Twitter poll. The biggest factor for the Bills' offense to keep going to sustain success. On Twitter, 49% of you, half of you say, let's just keep going with the up-tempo, no-huddle pace. 36% of you say, make sure Josh Allen is versatile, runs it, throws it, all of the above. 11% of you say, let's keep it simple, the way they did against Miami. 5% have something else in mind. Let's hear from you. 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Bills offensive coordinator Brian Daboll met with the media yesterday. The Bills ran no huddle against the Dolphins, we know. And even Josh Allen said he kind of gets to the answers to his questions easier in no huddle. Brian Daboll was asked about that. Do they keep going no huddle forward? And what does he think about the way Josh Allen handles the no huddle attack? Here he is.
It's week to week. You take a look at the team you're playing, some of the things that they do against it. You look at yourself and your personnel and what you think you can get out of it. Again, just because you go no huddle doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to drive down and score a bunch of points. It's the execution of whatever concept, whether it's huddle up, use different personnel groups, go fast. Going fast allows them to have more time at the line of scrimmage. So he can, see things. We can communicate up until, the time is, ends. So we'll see how it goes.
See how it goes. I like at the end of that comment, too, when he said we can communicate. Going fast allows them to have more time at the line of scrimmage, so you can see things, we can communicate up until the time ends. Josh told us yesterday, clock, the communication stops at 15 seconds on the clock. You got to believe they get the play in quickly. They call the play. Josh walks up to the line of scrimmage, and in that walk up there, for a couple of seconds at least, he's got Daboll in his ear, right, saying, hey, see that safety over there? He's shading this way, so let's do this instead, right?
Right, yeah.
That works.
It does work, and to a certain extent, too, Josh alluded to that. He does – you got the feeling when we spoke to Josh yesterday, you can go back and listen to it yourselves on at the website. Josh intimated, it didn't happen every time. It wasn't a lot like Daboll was sparking him and the thing clicked off in the middle of a sentence by Daboll because Daboll's trying to talk to him all the time. You get the feeling that there wasn't that much after the play was called, maybe a word here or a word there is about all there was on those communications up until the 15-second time because I get it. We live with, earpieces. I mean, we have people talk to us when they need to. Right. So you don't talk while somebody's trying to do something else, right? You do it as little as possible, and I think Daboll knows that. But still, nevertheless, use keywords and key phrases to alert the quarterback for something because you have conversations. I mean, these guys they live with each other all day, every day. And so they understand the way to communicate with each other with one word, with a look, and like on the field. Players do it. They like give you a little eyebrow raise and a little nod of the head, and you know exactly what the guy means. It means make the adjustment. Same thing with a quick word or a phrase from an offensive coordinator to a player. So it wasn't like Daboll's in there, reading the preamble to the Constitution, trying to get that in before the 15 seconds every single play. But it is a weapon you can use when it is there to be used.
What is the biggest factor for the Bills to sustain success on offense? Let's go back to the tweet sheet brought to you by Corrigan Moving Systems, the official movers of the Buffalo Bills. You got some tweets right in front of you there, buddy.
I do, go ahead. And I see it from JR. He says, it has to come back. It has to be game plan specific, but I wouldn't totally abandon any one of these factors. Josh is going to play versatile because he is, and the up-tempo allows the offense to put the D on their heels and keep it simple, is what any head coach wants to remain mistake-free. That's what any coach wants to remain mistake-free, and that is keeping it simple. Sipping the Kool-Aid also adds, the answer is up-tempo pace. Josh is just so much better in that scenario. We did it early in the year and moved the ball very successfully, both running and passing. Not sure why we ever got away from it.
Can I just say, if anyone's got documentation of that, I'd like to see it. I'm not denying that might be the case, but to say that they did it early in the year, he's so much better in that scenario, I'd like to see evidence of that. Do you know what I'm saying? Do you think that?
Yeah, I don't.
Is that apparent? Does Josh play better up-tempo, no huddle? I don't know that he does.
I don't know. If he may feel more comfortable, but I don't remember him doing a bunch of it at the beginning of the year. The only thing I remember about noticing what they did early in the year was an opening day against the Jets. And I talked about it then. They got out every play, and we talked about this. Every play was a different personnel group, different combination of tight ends, different combination of wide receivers, different running backs. Then they would go back to the rear, and they'd bring out the wide receivers again. Then they would line up, and then during the cadence, and as the play clock ran down, they would shift out of that formation that they lined up in. And then after they shifted, somebody would go in motion again. So they were moving and changing the formation and the strengths of the formation right up until the snap, and that was kind of the game plan that they did. I don't remember them being an up-tempo kind of offense like that. Maybe they did it in the Giants game or
I don't think they played the Cincinnati game. They have not played an entire game that way as they did against Miami while the game was still in doubt.
I don't remember ever talking about it very much.
You know, one more from the tweet sheet from Jake. What's the biggest factor for the Bills to sustain success offensively? Jake says, let Allen be Allen. He doesn't need to be 100% reckless or 100% conservative. Let him evenly mix the pocket passer he's become over the last several weeks with the exciting, elusive playmaking quarterback he has been, and they'll be all right.
That sounds far too reasoned and intelligent to be on our show. I'm sorry.
On Twitter, Jim. That's for sure.
Right.
You don't talk intelligently like that on Twitter. What are you, crazy? A couple of calls here. Jake. Bill in Niagara Falls. Hi, Bill. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I was just thinking on your side of Sunday's game. A tight end jumps a little bit, gets a penalty, and the coach pulls him. Lineman taunts, the coach pulls him. What do you think about, I don't know what Steve thinks about showing up a player like that. Is it
good? Oh, I don't know if that's showing up. And I did notice this while I was calling the game Sunday, Steve, and Bill's player be called for a penalty, a pre-snap penalty, or even a post-snap penalty, and they came off the field for the most part. A lot of them did that. Not everyone, but
they haven't been doing that the whole season.
Right. Oh, I think it was a kind of a new development Sunday.
Yeah, I think they're sending a message. And I think the message would be not so much what happens on game day when the guy gets benched, but the message they said before the game started during the week leading up to it, say, listen, guys, we're going to cut these pre-snap penalties out or you're going to get benched. If you make a mistake like that, you're coming off the field. And I think in doing so, they had to back it up. And I think that's what they did. This wasn't like a game thing, out of the blue thing. Those players knew it was coming. And it's part of the reason why you do things like that. They know it's coming, so that's the impetus for them to make different decisions on the field, to sit tight and hold their water on a third and short so they don't get pulled off the field. It's an absolute – and I don't know that – I'm not going to say it's a last resort, but it's certainly another step in the process of getting guys to listen up and not jump off sides and get false starts and pre-snap and post-snap penalties. When you bench them because of it, it sends the strongest message possible. Now, once the coaching staff says that, if they don't pull the guy out of off the field, it undermines their credibility and their respect they'll get in the locker room. They'll lose the locker room because of it. But once they went there and they're going to do it, they're going to do it.
I don't know if they've got penalties under control. The Bills are down to an average of 7 penalties per game, and I want to say about 3-4 weeks ago they were almost, I think they were at 9 penalties per game. That's a significant drop-off in just a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Seven penalties a game. Yeah, you'd like it to be a little, maybe 5-6 penalties a game, but they're getting there, I think.
Yeah. Who knows? I don't keep track of it. I know when it – I really don't care about competitive penalties. The pre-snap, post-snap penalties, yeah, those are unacceptable. The penalties I care about are the ones when it's third and one and you jump off sides.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those are the ones you cannot have. The ones when it's a third down or it's a third and short and your defense gets a penalty and that gives them a first down. The ones you get, the big plays you give or give up, because of a penalty are the crushers.
Yep.
It's the timing of it is the crusher. And, you know, but pre-snap, post-snap is inexcusable.
Here's a call from Brian in Hamburg. Hello, Brian. Welcome. You're on the air.
Hey, how's it going? I want to say that the offense success mainly relies on how we use Devin Singletary. And if I'm pretty sure the numbers show that if he's got it, if he's having a big game, and it ends in a W. So what do you guys think of that? And I'll just let you guys speak on it.
Well, okay. If your starting running back has a great day, it usually spells good things for your team, no matter who it is, whether it's Frank Gore or Devin Singletary. It's the logic that because this is a statistic, this has to be the reason for it. And what's the name? The ad hoc logic, pro hoc.
Post hoc, propter hoc.
Pro, yeah. That
after this, because of this,
right? I don't know. Devin Singletary is a good player for this team, and I think he's going to continue to be a really good player. And he's becoming more and more consistent, and the team is starting to give him more and depend on him more. I think we even notice it in our end of it. I think this regime, that Sean McDermott's philosophy is, he really eases young, if he can, he eases young players into their contributing point very slowly, both on and off the field. I think they do that when they put them on the field. They do so sparingly in the beginning of their rookie year and up through the halfway point. And I think now we've seen that as Devin Singletary has evolved, now he's kind of the bell cow of this offense more so than Frank Gore is, and their roles are reversing. And I think that is true throughout the Bills organization. There's been a couple of exceptions, no question.
Cody Ford is an exception.
Cody Ford, what? Tremaine Edmonds was an exception.
Oh, yeah.
Tre'Davious White was an exception. But I think those were players that were in unique situations in their position group, not just the fact that they were especially gifted, which those guys are, but even Josh Allen was eased into it. Remember, he didn't start at the starting of his rookie season. Nathan Peterman did. And, you know, then after Nathan Peterman, it was Derek Anderson. And then it was, you know, so it took him a long time to get on the field. And I think it's this regime's philosophy is to ease rookies into it. Dawson Knox was an example that because of Tyler Kroft being injured, I don't think they had any intention of starting Knox as early as they did. But he was the last guy standing. Remember, they had three tight ends hurt.
Yeah.
So because of all of that, Devin Singletary is going to emerge, I think, further and further. And I think now in the second half of the year, if I was going to make a generalization, I think all the young guys are going to get more time and more looks on the offense or defensive side of the football, because I think that's one of the things this head coach likes to do with his rookies. And that second half of their rookie season, then he turns them loose a little. A
couple of other issues I want to get to you about the Bills before we get to the bottom of this hour. But let me squeeze in another call here. Let's go to Bruce in Florida. Hey, Bruce, how are you?
Hey, guy. Awesome. How are you guys doing today?
Okay, real good.
Listening to you guys every day.
Thanks.
After 31 years of living down here in Florida, I finally dragged my butt down to the stadium to watch a Bills game.
What took so long?
I don't know. It's a long drive from where I live, Central Florida. But it was my better half's first NFL game. She's not even a Bills fan, but she is now.
First question. I know you got another point. Can I ask you a quick question?
Sure.
What percentage of the crowd there in Hard Rock Stadium would you estimate were Bills fans Sunday?
It was a home game for Buffalo.
Like more than 50%, huh?
Oh, my Lord. Are you kidding me? When who's that, Jordan Phillips or whatever that defensive tackle is?
Yeah.
He was waving his arms. I know for a fact Fitzpatrick couldn't hear himself think.
That was crazy. Go ahead. You had other points you wanted to make, Bruce.
Yeah, that was my first away game. I've always flown up for a Bills game.
Oh, excellent.
I got to tell you, that kid in the middle, Edmonds, he is a bona fide stud. I was watching him specifically and the way he played on defense. The older he gets, the better he's going to get. There is no two ways about it. And you know, I know who we were playing. You know, I'll make no mistake about it, but I just think that these guys are on the right track. They're doing the right things. They're going to have some hiccups along the way, but so did our guys back in the day with Kelly and all them. They had their hiccups too.
Thanks, Bruce.
Appreciate it, Bruce.
Glad you went to the game.
Right. And I agree with you. I thought Tremaine Edmonds was a force in that game for a Bills defense that dominated. I thought he was – here's the thing. We get calls every so often where people will say, I think they should move Tremaine Edmonds to outside linebacker. I think he would be better at rushing the passer. Da, da, da. Well, here's the thing. Today's inside linebacker of the NFL is not like Mike Singletary or Dick Butkus. They got to go sideline to sideline, and they got to carry a tight end down the middle of the defense and run with people and get in the passing lanes and drop into coverage. And Tremaine Edmonds has the ability to go sideline to sideline in the run game as well as the pass game. And once in a while, you'll see him. He'll get balled up with a blocker and won't get off the block. And that's the one aspect people will always point to. But let me tell you something. That guy does so much that is just – awesome. You can't think about moving him out of that spot. He's great in pass coverage. He goes sideline to sideline in the running game. And I'll tell you this too. When they bring him on the blitz, the sky goes dark. The guy is a monster coming off up the middle or off the edge in his gap as a blitzer. He's big and long. When he gets close to the quarterback and spreads his arms up or jumps up in the air, he is unbelievably
huge and hard to throw the football around. You see, we're seeing highlights too. He's 25 yards down the field with a tight end knocking the ball away, and he's also in the backfield, you know, just all over the quarterback. He's a phenomenal blitzer when they use him that way. He's great in the pass game and coverage, and he shows great speed going sideline to sideline on wide runs. For whatever else some people don't think he does well, all that stuff more than makes up for it. And he is, and I think yesterday and Sunday against the Dolphins, you saw a glimpse of why he's not going anywhere for a long, long time. That guy's a middle linebacker for a while.
Another thing on defense in use in terms of usage of personnel, cornerback spot. It was like an even split at the cornerback spot opposite Tre'Davious White. Levi Wallace started, got 33 snaps. Kevin Johnson finished, got 36. So it was almost an even split. It was like two series for one, two series for the other. Sean McDermott talked about it a little bit yesterday when he was asked which way they're going with that. How did Levi handle the fact that he was taken off the field, giving up some of his snaps to Kevin Johnson? Here's what McDermott said.
We did that at a couple other positions as well. And Levi, as I said before, Joe, he's a team-first, unselfish young man that has done and played a lot of good football for us, and we expect him to continue with that. Just rolling them was just taking a look at different combinations again, and then making the offense work a little bit as well in some different areas, different types of players, different combinations.
And Leslie Frazier would not commit to what the plan is going forward. I find that, you know, when we talked about it last week, not a shock because Levi had struggled, had been targeted, just as Kevin Johnson will get targeted if he's out there.
It's not going to change.
Right. I don't know what benefit there is to a platoon system like that. What do you think?
You know, I was thinking about this just as we were listening to Sean talk right there, Coach McDermott. I think, and it's what I said a few minutes ago, I think they're at the point of the season where they're going to start to make some real decisions about winning every game. I think they probably thought defensively they had a little bit of a margin of error against the Dolphins. Mm-hmm. And they said, let's try a little bit of, you know, let's work it in, see how he does. Let's work Kevin Johnson in, see if he can do some things in the run game. Let's see if he can make the checks and cover some guys. Let's see how Levi handles it. And let's see what effect it has on the rest of the defense rolling those guys in. I think there's a concerted effort on the part of this coaching staff to let this team evolve. And they're at the point of the season now where they're still trying to find some things out about who they could be.
You're close to saying that was a preseason game last Sunday. just saying.
It's a good point. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If we're going to try some, okay.
That's the one to try.
Because, yeah. I mean, we're watching the Dolphins play, and we're like, you're calling for 30 points on for an offense that hasn't scored, you know.
I know, twice as many they're averaging.
Right. So you knew, and you knew. So the coach
even said, I knew.
Right.
So Steve knows.
I think this. They said, all right, this is a week. Let's try some things. Let's send some pressure. They don't blitz a lot here in Buffalo. Boy, they did last week.
Yeah.
A lot. A little bit of it is analytics, I'm sure, going forward. They're going to get some mileage out of this for these teams that they're facing. They're going to say, oh, they blitz this much. We got to think about this. So, yeah, I think there was a little bit of that.
A little experimentation. Hey, it's time now to let you know the winners of the AdPro Sports Buffalo Bills High School Coaches of the Week this week. We do it every week. AdPro Sports, Bills Coaches of the Week. Section 6, the Buffalo area. We go with Coach Rich Robbins at Canisius, led the Crusaders to a 27-21 win over top-ranked St. Francis in the Monsignor Martin Association Championship game. Robbins has led Canisius to the championship game 8 straight seasons. They won 6 of them. In Section 5, Rochester, the Ed Pro Sports High School Coach of the Week is Coach Justin Mann of Letchworth, Warsaw. They lost Saturday in the Far West Regional Playoff game against Southwestern, but despite that, Letchworth, Warsaw was 9-2, their second straight Section 5 title. Mann was named head coach of the program in 2017. Congratulations, coaches. Congratulations, players. The Ad Pro Sports Buffalo Bills High School Coaches of the Week. Luke Tasker, a high school football standout years ago here in Western New York, going to join us next. Steve and I will talk with him as he gets set to head to the Grey Cup with the Hamilton Ticats. That's coming up next on the show. One Bills Live presented by Kalina Health on Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back, One Bills Live. John Murphy, Steve Tasker, and a special guest on the line with us right now, getting set to play in the Grey Cup this weekend, Sunday, 6 p.m. Eastern. Hamilton and Winnipeg and Calgary. We've got Luke Tasker on the line with us. He has co-hosted the show. And, of course, he is Steve's son, your favorite son, I think you told me, right?
Today he is, right? Congratulations again, Luke. You guys are out in Calgary. You get there today, right? We're talking in the break. Calgary is no stranger to the Hamilton Tiger Cats. You guys spend a week out there in your travels and your West Coast swing during the season.
That's right. We did it this year and years in the past too. We play Edmonton is just a short drive north of Calgary. So when we go out there, we sort of like a sort of hockey, you know, like the NHL does these road trips. We'll do that too. So we went out and played Calgary, stayed out west in Calgary for a week, and then played Edmonton the following week. And that was just, you know, two months ago or so. And Calgary's actually a fantastic city, so it'll be a nice week. They'll host the Grey Cup very well, I think.
Luke, you've been to Super Bowls, I presume, maybe when you were a little kid?
I was 2 weeks old at the first Super Bowl, I'm told.
What do you remember about that week?
Yeah, right.
But this is different, right? Well, you've been to Grey Cups, too. What do you think? What should people know, Buffalonians know, about the Grey Cup, the atmosphere, kind of the build-up, the hype about it?
Yeah, the way I like to describe it to Americans who don't probably know that much about the CFL is, you know, you think this year is a 52nd Super Bowl. What is it this year?
54th. I think it's 54th, 53, 53 or 54. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So this is the 107th Grey Cup that they have up there. And so this, you know, they went on pause for the Second World War. You know, I mean, it's and then they picked it up. You know, it's incredible the history that this has with the country. And you also got to remember that the entire country of Canada is similar in population to the state of California. And so this is a really, really special thing for the, you know, for in a sense of the identity of Canadians. And it's a special thing to take part in. So the whole city will be kind of decked out in you know, Grey Cup celebrations, and they'll have festivals set up there. And then the 107th Grey Cup will play. So I played in the 101st and the 102nd. That was in Saskatchewan and then in Vancouver and with the Ticats, and we lost both of those. And so now we're going out for the 107th to play Winnipeg and Calgary. And, you know, it just culturally, the tradition, the Ticats have won 15 Grey Cups over the 150 years that they've been a football franchise. And so we're trying to get the 16th Ticat Grey Cup. And man, it is just the city of Hamilton it couldn't be more excited and ready for another championship. And certainly it's going to be a fun time out in Calgary.
So your opponent for the game is the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. You play them at this point in history, it's a 9-team league. Fluctuated over the years, but now with you play these teams, you know, a couple of times during the regular season. What were your games like with Winnipeg like leading up and now meeting them again in the Grey Cup?
Yeah, this was the best regular season in Ticat history. We went 15-3 this year, and we did beat Winnipeg twice in the regular season. So you play every team in the league twice, and then you two of the teams in your division. So for us, this year it was Montreal and Toronto. We played three times, and that makes up your 18 game season. We beat Winnipeg twice, but it was not with the current quarterback. Zach Caleros, my former teammate, is starting for Winnipeg now. So you know, they're a different team now too, and they've sort of you know, scrapped their way to the Grey Cup. They beat Calgary in the semifinal in Calgary, and then this past weekend they beat Saskatchewan in Sask for the Western final. So they're playing really well right now. They kind of have a different feel, different identity now that since we've seen them last, with Zach Caleros playing for them.
With Luke Tasker, Steve's son, he's a wide receiver for the Hamilton Ticats, getting set to play in the Grey Cup this Sunday against Winnipeg. Luke, I know you've been banged up a little bit this season, right? You missed some time with a hamstring, I believe. What kind of a season has it been overall for you?
Yeah, it's been a tough year. So by far, it's been the best team I've been a part of here. It's been an unbelievable. We were undefeated at home, had a great season across the board. But yeah, I was banged up a lot. I had a sprain in my AC joint in my shoulder. I missed time for. I had a hamstring that I had missed time and set back again. And I ended up playing about half the regular season. I do feel healthy now, though, and I'm excited to be a part of this last stretch here. It's been a tough season for me personally, but I'm just excited to be a part of this last push for a Grey Cup, though.
So I just want to assure you that going to championship games and losing is not a genetic trait that you need to follow. I mean, right? You've been to two. You went to two Grey Cups. Right, right. You've been to two Grey Cups already in your career. It's been a while since your last one. But what do you remember about the others? And is there any advice you got for your teammates about what to do in this one?
Yeah, you know what? It doesn't feel like a regular week of practice. There's just so much going on. And when we're here, our schedule works out where we get to the facilities pretty early and we're practicing and we're off the field for our practice days by 1 o'clock. And when you're out for the Grey Cup, it just doesn't work that way. You've got, you know, media breakfasts and events that you're going to. You practice. It almost feels like you barely have time to practice during the day, you know, and then you get ready for the game. Like I said, we went out to Calgary earlier in the year, and we're out there for, you know, eight or nine days in the season. This time, you know, we're going out there, and our day one of the week is, you know, will be tomorrow when we arrive. Tomorrow morning after we've arrived, and we all of a sudden it's game day, you know, and that's what I remember from our first two Grey Cups. It's a kind of a whirlwind of a week, and you got to kind of, you know, prepare for that, for your game early on, because it gets a little hectic with all the festivities and Grey Cup events.
Luke Kansker on the line with us. I'm sorry.
No, the whole family, the clan is all coming out. I mean, we've got this. We've got an 8-bedroom thing that we all rented. So we're all going to, it's going to be fun for us. I hope you have a good week, because I know we're going to have a great weekend. So
yeah, it's going to be fun.
We'll try not to bother
you
too
much. Get a better city to travel and spend a weekend. And honestly, you never know what the weather is going to be in November there, but it does look like it's going to be reasonable. And the city of Calgary is a great place to spend some time.
Hey, Luke, what about the CFL has worked for you? I mean, you're in your seventh year right now in Canadian Football League. And, you know, grew up in East Aurora, played at Cornell. You've had shots with the NFL, but clearly you found your niche in the Canadian Football League. What do you think that is? What about that league has worked for you over these years?
You know what? I a lot of it is, I mean, maybe every player can say this from where they've found a home playing, but a lot of it is I got lucky. I have coaches that trust me. I was brought up here by Ken Austin and Tommy Condell, who were my coaches at Cornell. And so when I left San Diego, I came up with a coaching staff that had a little bit of trust in me. I still had to make my spot here. I had to earn my way to be a starter and to be a part of these teams. But once I felt comfortable with the difference in the way that the game is played, you know, wide receivers run towards the line of scrimmage before the snap of the ball here. The offense is a little bit different on a bigger field. When I learned those things and started feeling comfortable, I really, really felt like I could have a career up here and continue to play. And I'm lucky enough to have stayed with one franchise for 7 seasons. And, you know, I can't even tell you how incredible the experience all around would be if we capped this seventh year of mine off with a Grey Cup championship.
You're just an hour and a half down the road. You spend your off seasons back home in East Aurora, right? So being an hour and a half away has got to work for you too, I think, being in Hamilton all these years.
You know, that's just luck too, because, you know, had Ken Austin and Tommy Condell been hired by any other CFL team, I would have gone there, you know, given the shot, because I knew those guys. And it just so happens that they got a job, you know, closer to my home than Cornell is to Buffalo, you know, right. So it was really incredible. And I've spent so much time there now. And yeah, my wife and my son and I have an apartment up here in Hamilton, and we spend the seasons here, but I've gone back to Buffalo every off season, and we've kind of lived this dual life for 7 years, which has kind of been a real blast, actually. It's really been fun. Hamilton's a second home for me.
How much longer do you want to do it?
Well, maybe till they tell me I can't anymore. I don't know.
Yeah, there you go. That's the right answer.
It's been a brutal year for me physically. I've been banged up, and like I said, I'm just happy to be back on the field now. But you know, I could. I don't even know. I'm not even letting myself think about things like that. I just want to win a Grey Cup this year.
What kind of stadium do they have in Calgary? What's it look like? Is it how many people
you know,
does it hold?
Murph, you're just saying about the Olympics. That I believe I could be wrong, but I believe this stadium was built for used for the Olympics in Calgary, and it's a substantial building. It's a little dated now, but it's something like 65,000 people, and it's all about the. You know, I've never played in it for like a neutral event like this, but you know, normally it's all about the Calgary Stampeders, you know, out there. It's a hometown stadium in a football city. You know, the Stampeders have a great have had a real successful franchise there, so it is one of the great football cities in Canada. But they'll have it decked out, you know, all sort of neutral, you know, Grey Cup style this year. And sure, it'll be a great venue.
You think there'll be many folks from Hamilton making that long trip out west? I know there'll be some from East Aurora, but what about Hamilton?
Everyone I've passed and talked to for the last 2 days has guaranteed me they're going to be there. If no one's lying, there's going to be 100,000 Hamilton fans there. So we'll see. But I'm telling you, for the Buffalo fans, the Buffalo area, the Bills fans would really have an appreciation for the way that Hamilton comes out for their franchise team. Because, man, the like I said, it's been 150 years of football in this city, and it is really, really part of the identity of the city. The fans are ecstatic. The last Grey Cup, so we've won 15 in franchise history, and the last one was 99. So 20 years ago was the last Grey Cup, and we are hurting for another Grey Cup. It's time.
Well, one of the things too about this Calgary Grey Cup that's coming up, and one of the things in the ones that I went to, the thing that got me about it was when you go to a Super Bowl in the NFL, it's about the two teams in it. Like, for instance, you know, this last year it was about the Patriots and whoever it was they play and the Rams. It was about those two teams. But in the Grey Cup, the one thing that struck me, all the cities, every team in the Grey Cup is represented. All the fans show up. There's as many jerseys from every team as there are for the two teams that are actually playing in it, and I thought that was really interesting.
I found that to be true as well. Last year I was at the Grey Cup in Edmonton between Calgary and Ottawa, and I was there for like for promotional things, you know, for the league, and there was like three Ticat bars. So like whole weekend, it's just Ticat fans in these venues, and we weren't even in the Grey Cup. I mean, it's really unbelievable. And then you see people. I've met so many people who have like been to every Grey Cup for the last 25 years. It's, you know, some story like that they have, you know, and that's whether their team's playing or not. And so they have all the teams there will have their locations where their fans can meet up. It really is like a national holiday almost.
Hey, Luke, before we cut you loose, can you do me a favor? For months, I've been trying to get your dad to do the Oski Wee Wee chant, and he won't do it for us here. I don't want you to do it. Can you tell him he's got to do it before he leaves?
Come on, be proud, be loud, and be considerate. Let's get an Oski Wee Wee chant for us.
Will. Yeah, right. Maybe sometime during this week, during one of the breaks.
Okay, good.
Yeah,
right. Good.
Thanks,
you're
Luke.
Supposed we'll to have, you're supposed to have a little bowler hat too, Murph.
So I know, I'll get one of those too.
Hey, Luke, we're really happy for you.
We'll see you in Calgary, bud.
Good stuff. All right, guys, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Luke. Right. Good luck to you. Luke Tasker on the line with us, getting set to head to Calgary for the Grey Cup. Hamilton Tiger Cats, Winnipeg Blue Bombers in Calgary Sunday. What do we figure? 6 o'clock Eastern time Sunday, right?
Yeah.
So I can watch that. It's certainly, I think it's probably on ESPN, I would think, right?
ESPN or ESPN2, yeah, or ESPN it. News or ESPN yeah. Plus, one of those two. I imagine it'll be on the two, Deuce or whatever. But it's on, you can get it on virtually every single Canadian Football League game. Is on that platform someplace you can find it if you want to look for it.
Before the week is over.
No.
We'll play it before the week is over.
Yeah, Friday.
Friday. We'll do it Friday. All right, thanks. Thanks to Luke. Thanks to Steve. We're coming back with more One Bills Live presented by Kaleida Health from the Seneca Studio in Orchard Park on Buffalo Bills Radio.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Hey, what did we learn from today's show? Is brought to you by Skyworks, the official construction equipment rental company of the Buffalo Bills. We had our buddy Kyle Brandt on the show from NFL Network earlier on today. He's the co-host of Good Morning Football. He was looking for Josh Allen to impress him against the Dolphins, and it sounds like he was impressive to Kyle Brandt. Here's what he said.
There's a long way to go, for sure, because There's some really, really scary dogs in the AFC right now, especially one who plays for Baltimore and one who plays for New England. But listen, I think the takeaway after this week for Buffalo was, yeah, but it was Miami. Who cares? That's right. A division opponent. That's a team that played them tough the first time around. And sometimes you got to just have a sparring partner that you can just land some haymakers on. Listen, start to finish, I thought it was Josh Allen's best game of his career. It wasn't only that he was efficient and the numbers great. He just looked confident. He looked comfortable. And yes, Miami's D is terrible, but I don't care. That's exactly what you should do to a terrible D, is absolutely light them up. It was my favorite game of his. My young favorite, Dawson Knox, scored. John Brown looked like more than just a deep threat. It was really, really a good day. And yes, they played a poor team, but they beat them by a lot, which is exactly what you should do. I thought Josh Allen, he bites. He bites, and I love it.
Josh Allen bites, and I love it. Hey, we had a good Twitter poll today. I think it was a pretty good one, talking about what the Bills accomplished offensively against the Dolphins and how do they carry that forward. So that was a question today. What did you see from the Buffalo Bills offense that you think they need to sustain moving forward? And on Twitter, we got pretty good response. The biggest factor for the Bills offense to sustain success moving forward into the final games, almost half of you, 48%, say just continue going no huddle, up tempo. 36% say keep Josh versatile, let him run, let him throw. 11% say just keep it simple, and 6% have something else in mind. You okay with those results from 1,000 voters? I guess
yeah,
we have no
choice.
Good.
I mean,
we accept the mandate of the voters.
Yeah, the up tempo was a big thing this last week, and I think Josh. I mean, he's a starting quarterback for your team, and he's a young player who's getting better. He certainly thinks everything's going to center around his development, and he's getting better. We're seeing things to watch out for him. Pre-snap, post-snap, it's been fun to watch him, and we'll see if he can continue to grow.
They are back on the practice field tomorrow. We'll take you there on tomorrow's show starting at 12 noon. Our production assistants, George Blass, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Honiter, Kelly Rude, J.J. Torito, Kevin Cargis, James Roble, the producer, Jay Harris. See you tomorrow right here, 12 noon to 3 p.m. One Bills Live presented by Kalina Health from the Seneca Studio in Orchard Park. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.